Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Unsolved Dimension. I'm one of your hosts today, Adam, and alongside me is Isaiah.
Hello.
And Jamin.
We're embarking on a grand adventure up to the mountains of Russia. And what's on the docket? Death!
And vodka.
And the vodka. Mmm. The warmest vodka you can ever imagine.
So tell me, Jamin, what we doing? What are we doing today?
We're talking about the mysterious deaths at Detlev Pass. Now, this is a legend that's been out there for a little while, and it started back in 1959, so you may have heard of it.
It ain't no legend, Jamin.
Oh, no, it's not a legend. This is history.
Fact.
These are facts. What we are about to read to you now are the facts. One of the few times I can say that.
Facts.
No Ed and Lorraine up in here tonight. We'll get to the less than factual things later on, because you'll see why this is still unsolved dimension. So, let's get things kicked off. In 1959, a group of 9 experienced skiers decided to embark on an expedition across the treacherous terrain of the northern Urals in Sverdlovsk Oblast, Soviet Union. The team was put together by Igor Detlev, a 23-year-old radio engineer student at the Ural Federal University, which is the biggest technical institute of higher education in Russia. The members included 8 men and 2 women. Everyone involved was a professional grade 2 hiker with ski tour experience and would receive their grade 3 certification upon completing the adventure. Grade 3 is the highest certification available and requires the candidates to travel 190 miles before achieving it. The route they had plotted was categorized at grade 3 and would take place in early February, the most challenging time of the year to travel due to the harsh elements they would face. On January 25th, the team arrived at the town of Ivdel. From Ivdel, they took a truck to Vizhai, a lorry village to the north that was the last inhabited settlement in that region. Little did they know that this would be the last time they would ever be seen alive. At sunrise on January 27th, the team embarked on their final journey. I know I said that the group consisted of 9 hikers, but actually, there was a 10th. Because of severe joint and back pains, the 10th explorer decided to return to town just one day after they left, saving himself from the horrors that the rest of the team would soon face.
What?
He'll come back into play later.
He got out easy.
I know, he walked up there, he's like, my knees hurt, it's cold, I don't want to be up here anymore, take me home.
My vagina hurts.
Can confirm, not what he was complaining about.
Do we actually know that?
Yes. 100%, he was not having vaginal issues during his trek. God, stupid.
Read the room, Isaiah.
Read the room. Now, moving forward, we can get a rough idea of what took place leading up to their incident, thanks to the recovered journals and cameras. On January 31st, the group arrived at their first major obstacle, climbing up a mountain with all their skis and gear in hand. A small cache of food for their trip back was found in the woods near where they ascended. Once they completed the climb, the team started to move through the pass, planning to get through before nightfall and camp on the other side. Due to poor weather conditions, they ran into some issues. Because of poor visibility, they discovered that they were almost an entire mile off course to the west. It must have been getting late in the evening at this point, so the team decided to set up camp on the mountain where they were. The events that occurred that night are what we are going to be discussing. The sports club that commissioned the expedition was expecting a telegram from the hikers on February 12th, once they returned to Vizhai, completing their journey. The 12th came and went, and no one heard from the team. No one was too alarmed at first, because it's not out of the ordinary for these hikers to take a little longer than expected. On February 20th, 8 days after they should have returned, family members demanded that a search party be assembled to locate the 9 missing hikers. The head of the institute put together the first search party consisting of volunteer students and teachers. After a few days of searching, the army and militia forces, it's not militia. It auto-corrected that, but it's militia. It's
militia.
Like the police. It's not militia, though. That's what it says, but like, it's not. You're going to have to trust me on that one.
I don't.
It's like, look, it says militia on the script, and I get that, but it's a militia. It's like a Russian police. It's like the Russian police.
Okay.
Okay, let me pull it up. Let me do a quick little.
You're full of shit.
Yeah.
We when he rush. Said that, I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Here it is. Militia was the name of the police force in the Soviet Union until 1991. Okay. After a few days of searching, the army and militia forces became involved, with planes and helicopters ordered to join the operation. Finally, on February 26, the searchers found the group's campsite. The site baffled the searchers, and they knew right away something terrible happened.
What was it, Jamin? What was terrible?
Mikhail Sharavan, the student who found the tent, said,
"The tent was half torn down and covered with snow. It was empty, and all the group's belongings and shoes had been left behind."
Investigators discovered that the tent had been slashed open from the inside, and there were 9 sets of footprints leading down the mountain.
I feel like that's pretty impressive that you can tell that it was slashed from the inside.
You know, maybe, yeah. I could see it being like, if the material was stretched out more outward, you know? Like, it, if you have a sheet and you push on the sheet, like, let's say you put a bed sheet on and you step on it, you're going to see an indention, like, you know, how it kind of stretches the material. So you could see, like, when the knife or whatever pushed into the tent would have been more outwards, possibly. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but...
You're not? What?
No.
Is that a legal disclaimer that we have to give?
Mr. Jamin, I am not a scientist.
You do a science thing. You do science stuff. No. Show stab with the fab prep.
No.
So what about these footprints?
The prints indicated that only one hiker was wearing one shoe, and the rest were either barefoot or just in their socks. The tracks led investigators to the wood's edge at the bottom of the pass 1.5 miles down the mountain. The tracks were only visible for 500 meters before they got covered up by snow, but they discovered 2 of the hikers dead at the tree line. The bodies were those of Krivonoshenko, age 23, and Doroshenko, age 21, shoeless and dressed only in underwear, huddled around what appeared to be the remnants of a small fire. The branches on the tree they were under had been broken up to 5 meters high, making investigators speculate that they were looking for something. Were they searching for their campsite or trying to see something else?
Something else. Something else. Definitely something else, Jamin.
Absolutely something else. There's got to be something. What's chasing them? What's coming down the mountain after them?
I think it was some Brokeback Mountain shit.
Oh my gosh. There's like 6 guys and 3 girls. You're right, the math does not up.
I thought they were all guys.
No.
Well, 2 of the guys are naked.
Oh, just wait, Isaiah. You'll find something out.
They were lovers.
No, that is a theory. It's so. But we'll continue on. As the search continued, 3 more bodies were discovered. The remains of Detlev, age 23, Kolmogorova, age 22, and Slobodan, age 23, were found in poses that made it appear that they were trying to search for their campsite, but to no avail. They were found at distances 300, 480, and 630 meters from the tree line. So these guys, they were like crawling up the mountain, found dead.
Were they connected to each other's booty holes?
We're going to continue.
It was a human centipede.
And Isaiah, do you know what a... Do you know how long a meter is?
It's about, what is it, 20 yards?
Okay, no. Let's move on.
Hang on. Whoa. I got this.
Just, not even
now
close.
I'm very curious.
Don't just, tell me.
I mean, it's very interesting that he used the term, that he used yards to describe.
A meter is like a lap around the track, 1 lap.
So a 100 meter dash is 100 laps?
100 meter. 3 feet.
3.28.
Oh, yes.
You did it.
So, now, I mean, that's just a lot of feet, though.
The closest one to the tree line, so they're obviously searching for something or running from something.
I mean, like, the closest one was almost 1,000 feet away.
Yeah, they're way out there. Now, it took an additional 2 months to locate the last 4 bodies. Zolan Tarayev, age 38. Dublinina, age 20, Krivonoshenko, age 23, and Brignoles, age 23, were all found under 13 feet of snow in a ravine 75 meters further into the woods. It's believed that these individuals survived the longest because they were wearing some of the scraps of clothes owned by the other dead hikers found earlier.
That's what I was talking about, Isaiah. You were like, they were naked, but it's because the other people took their clothes.
Well, maybe they were making love.
Oh, and it was a prank in negative 20 degree weather. They're like, let's go take their shirt. It's going to be so funny when they're trying to get dressed again.
Yeah. There's all these like young people, and then there's like just this 38-year-old guy.
Hey, he needed his grade 3 certification. And here we're going to get into the details of the injuries, which are very peculiar. 6 of the hikers died of hypothermia. Okay, not too out of the ordinary, gotta say. That's to be expected. And 3 from strange injuries.
What constitutes as a strange injury?
Well, after the bodies were recovered and examined, it was revealed that 2 of the hikers suffered severe chest trauma, similar to what you would find in a car crash victim. Another body suffered a fatal skull fracture.
Did I read wrong? I thought even some of the ones that had, like, the skull fracture and stuff died of hypothermia.
There was one guy that was crawling up the hill that had a crack in his skull, so it wasn't a full skull fracture. They said that wasn't fatal. That injury wouldn't be fatal, but one of the other guys had a severe skull fracture that would constitute as fatal. So there were 2 head injuries, but one of them is the cause of death. Okay, parts of the bodies were also missing on the final 4 victims, including a tongue, eyeballs, and eyebrows. The final clue that baffles investigators is that 2 of the bodies and the area surrounding the campsite contained an unusually high radiation level. Once the coroner concluded his autopsy, the cause of death was listed as compelling natural forces, and the case was quickly put to rest. Many have argued against the conclusion offered by officials, and to this day, theories of what happened to the hikers continue to baffle researchers around the world.
That's very interesting.
And it's just weird because they just like don't know anything.
And this was back in 1959, and it's still a story that's continuously brought up today. So it's piqued interest for over 60 years at this point. It's insane. So now we should take a look at what some of the theories are of what exactly it was that made all this happen. What's the conclusion? What do we think? What have we found out since? Why is it being covered up so heavily? Why can't people talk about it? We got to figure it out. We got to get to the bottom of this one.
Yeah, we do.
That's very strange.
Before we dive into these, what do you guys think so far? Any ideas that have popped up?
I'm kind of thinking werewolves.
Interesting.
Yeah.
This isn't London, though.
I think werewolves can be anywhere.
That's fair.
Thinking maybe an avalanche.
That is one that we will come across.
I'm also thinking, you guys ever see Wrong Turn?
No.
Could be some Chernobyl dudes in Russia that are radioactive, and they might not be mutated, but they could have went and ate their tongues and attacked them. They're like crazy cannibals.
Wait, I spaced out a little bit, but you think cannibalism? Is that where you went?
Chernobyl cannibals.
Chernobyl cannibals. Okay, so we should get into some of these theories. The first theory we should discuss is a military cover-up.
What? They would never do anything like that.
Yeah, this is in Russia, so I don't know.
The Soviet Union, they've always been honest with their people. What are you talking about?
So is the U.S. government.
Just look at your palms and walk down the road and you'll be in good shape.
I don't walk, Jamin. I run.
Away from what? Why is everyone running? What are you afraid of, Adam? Stand up and fight. This is your moment. Seize the day.
So, about this military cover-up?
Military. Right, back to the military. Let's keep in mind, we did our episode early on about the space race. This is right around that time, 1959. This is right when the space race was kind of getting kicked off. So they were working on some secret projects that they didn't want people to know about and everything. So just keep in mind the time period of everything going on.
And they were the first to space. Russia.
They were, but how dare you remember that? But it's the first to the moon that wins. First man to the moon that wins. That's the only thing we wanted, that whole situation. They were technically the first to the moon.
Yeah, but I mean, space is pretty cool too.
Yeah. Well, why do we think it's a military cover-up? It turns out the 10th hiker, remember him? Mr. My ankles are too sore to continue on. Oh,
maybe he knew something.
China.
Isaiah, no. Well, the 10th hiker revealed that some of the cloth material recovered at the campsite was not part of the hiker's gear and appeared to be similar to what the military uses on their equipment. During the autopsy, a doctor mentioned that the injuries could have been caused by a shockwave from a powerful explosion. Some research shows that the pass where the camp was located was near where the military ran parachute mine tests. So that could be troublesome.
Yeah.
Some parachute mines out there, those things explode in the air and send out like a big shockwave.
Fracture your skull.
That would fracture a skull. That would cave in a chest. Because remember, there was no soft tissue damage. So whatever it was is like an elephant or your mama. It's laying on the chest.
I mean, something with that theory, though, is not all of them had like fractured skulls and caved in chests. And like,
that's true. The loud noises may also have just been enough to scare them and make them run down the mountain and use their knife to cut themselves out of the tent. But I don't know why that would be your first decision of what to do in that situation.
Maybe the zipper broke.
Now, there is a big issue with this, and that's that there were no reports of tests on record, and no evidence was found to back this theory up. If you're doing explosive tests out there, there's going to be some debris, right?
Probably.
Well, Jamin, my thing is, who was investigating this? Probably the government.
You're right. And it could be a cover-up because they found that cloth there, so maybe they came out before everyone else.
Yeah, because they're like...
And was like, oh, like, crap, oh. Guys, we got to pick up the scraps. Don't worry about the kids down the hill. We just got to clean up our mess.
Oh, there's no explosion. There's no evidence of it. Not even a little. But also, I feel like it'd be kind of hard to tell because, I mean, this one hiker's died and then there was 13 feet of snow on him. So like if there was an explosion, there would have been just snow covering everything.
So yeah, there's a few holes in this theory that make it stand apart. So we should move on to our next one, which I think is much more compelling. Some think that the group was attacked by a Yeti.
100% slam dunk, A+, this is it.
Now Yeti hunters, because that's a thing, that's a profession you could go into. Isaiah, what? You just look not convinced. You're just mad I didn't write down werewolf.
No, I don't know. And I don't know about the werewolf either, because it just doesn't explain why they would rip from the inside of their tent out, you know? But I could see a werewolf, one of the dudes changing inside the tent and ripping out of it.
So you're saying one of the hikers was a werewolf? Interesting.
So people think they were attacked by a Yeti?
Yeah. So Yeti hunters believe that the big white beast might have been disturbed by the loud explosions caused by the military's test, or maybe the hikers wandered into its territory when they deviated from their path. So our theories are connecting. It's a military cover-up and a Yeti.
Never leave the trail, Jamin. Never.
Never leave the trail.
Hold up. They have Yeti hunters?
Yeah, absolutely.
I knew we had Sasquatch hunters, kind of hunters, observers.
Why would you think a Yeti would be any different?
I don't know.
They're literally like cousins.
Are they? Jamin?
Who? Sasquatch and Yeti? Yes, absolutely. This whole situation did cause a movie to be made called Russian Yeti, The Killer Lives. And that was aired on Discovery Channel back in 2014. So there's some people that firmly believe there's Yetis out there in those mountains and they're going to go out there and they're going to get themselves a Yeti pelt.
What about bears?
They're just giving the Yeti a bad name. What if he's just a nice guy?
Yeah, like the abominable snowman. He's just out there making snow cones.
Was there even any evidence, though, like of a Yeti? Or did people just like say that?
I mean, do Yetis even leave evidence?
We don't know.
Exactly. There's as much evidence as there ever has been for a Yeti attack. That's why you can't rule it out.
They just fly.
Like I mentioned, there were no tracks, and the wounds don't appear to be similar to what a Yeti attack would produce. You know, like any other Yeti attack has produced.
My defense to all of these so far, when they found the bodies months later, there was 13 feet of snow on them. I guarantee when they found the first bodies, there was at least a little snow covering any sorts of tracks.
I agree.
Except they did say they found 9 sets of footprints.
They did see the footprints leaving the tent. And an interesting thing on top of it, I didn't write it down, but I do remember this during research, is they said the pacing of the tracks and the stride of them indicated that they weren't in a big rush. It was almost like they were walking out in just a regular manner. They weren't sprinting away.
Oh yeah, I was gonna ask, like, would you be able to tell from walking and running, like in the snow, you know? Yeah, which I feel like you could.
Tractors can tell.
You're not as much on your heels.
They were able to follow 500 meters of the tracks. Like, that's how far they had before they dissipated or got rubbed away.
So they weren't in a rush.
Right. That's what's kind of strange about the whole situation.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're running, your strides would be much longer apart.
Now, let's move on to our next one. Yeti might be a little far-fetched, so let's move into something maybe a little more realistic. You knew it was coming. Aliens.
Sold.
Huh? Yeah.
You don't even have to go in. We don't even have to cover it. Just, all right, it was aliens.
Good. So we covered that one. Next up. Oh, we're just kidding. Of course we're going to talk about the aliens. We got to talk about the aliens. Now, there might be something to this one. In February and March of that year, there were reports of strange orange lights hovering around the area. Lead investigator.
You don't have to go. Oh, that's it. Gotcha. We're done.
What's up? Oh, sold. We got it? Fantastic. Sold. I had like 6 more points for this, so I'm so happy that we got it. Now, lead investigator Lev Ivanov was quoted saying,
"I suspected at the time. I am almost sure now that these bright flying spheres had a direct connection to the group's deaths."
You sounded like Splinter.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's his name, right? The rat in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
So even according to their lead investigator, he's like, "There's these orange lights have got to have something to do with it, eh?"
I don't think they would even be able to tell if there were aliens there. We've never found any. Well, we found evidence, but not good evidence.
It is believed that aliens' equipment leaves a radioactive trace, and maybe the injuries involved, the missing eyes, tongue, and eyebrows, were part of an alien procedure. It also explains how the 3 hikers received the internal injuries. They were thrown out of the alien ship.
Didn't they find, like, higher radiation levels around where they were at?
Yeah. Did I not mention that earlier?
Maybe you did.
I don't think I did. I might have left it out. But two of the hikers' clothings, the last 2 hikers that were found, like that last group of 4, 2 of their clothings had higher than normal radiation activity on their clothes. And also around the campsite and that surrounding area, there was higher levels of radiation. Like, nothing too extreme, but enough to be like, the snow shouldn't have this much radiation. Like, I feel like that's pretty easy to figure out.
Aliens.
I do have to say that there was also another report that came out later on that I found. Apparently, 2 of the hikers did study some radioactive materials at the college, so there's a slight chance that they might have just happened to wear their jacket to school when they were studying that, but that's so far-fetched, I don't even want to mention it.
Yeah, that's crazier than the Yeti theory.
I know. What am I? I shouldn't have even said anything. What am I talking about? What do I know? Now, back to the aliens. So, the climbing of the tree could be because the group was trying to see the aliens and find out if they were still at the campsite or if the Yeti was still there. It's all connected. Maybe it was Yetis and aliens.
How are they going to see the Yeti? It's white and there's snow.
Here's the final point that makes aliens a little more interesting. Ivanov, the lead investigator, you know who I'm talking about, was ordered to close the case by the military as quickly as possible. Were they trying to hide the fact that aliens killed these poor college students and they didn't want the public to know the truth?
Possibly.
Probably.
Definitely. Now, there's no downsides to that one. Like, aliens proves everything. There's no, there's nothing else that can, like, the other ones have stipulations. It's like, well, this is the one thing that's weird. Aliens is the only one that's just sealed airtight because you can kind of make up everything you want around it, but whatever.
Did you know that fact? We know more about the ocean than aliens.
Yeah, we do.
No, that was the point. I was trying to make it like that. All right, back to the theories. I know earlier you mentioned avalanches were actually one of the theories.
It was. I think that was your theory early on.
Yeah, it was
what
mine.
What you thought might have been it.
I mean, I'm a skier and a snowboarder.
He was a skier boy.
They blast for avalanches all the time to make sure it doesn't happen on the actual resorts.
Finger blast you.
The avalanche is a theory that we have to include. So what if It buried the tent in the middle of the night, and the team had to cut their way out and didn't have time to grab any clothing or equipment. And they just ended up running down the hill in a panic, thinking that more avalanche was coming.
This theory just doesn't even seem plausible. That's just like, aliens explain it way better.
I know. Aliens covered everything, but we got to cover our bases here.
Just kidding. But am I?
Now, another interesting point that we got to take a gander at, which I think I've already disproven earlier, is that we want to just make sure we include is paradoxical undressing. Have you guys heard of this?
I think so. Is it when they get so cold that they like start to undress because they feel like their skin's burning?
Exactly. So paradoxical undressing might be the reason some of the hikers were found naked, a phenomenon seen in up to 50% of hypothermia-induced deaths that occur on land in which the deceased body is found either partially or completely undressed. The undressing has been attributed to paralysis of the vasomotor center, which imparts a sensation of increased body temperature and thus a desire to remove clothing. We also call this in Minnesota boogie fever. I shouldn't be joking about this. Now,
you get a little boogie in you.
Makes me take my clothes off. This still does not explain the radiation, missing tongue, and physical injuries of the team members that were found deep inside the forest. So what could it be? Well, let's move on to our next theory, because I think if we tie a couple of these together, it might bring everything together, and that is katabatic winds. Unlike anabatic wind, which is an upslope wind, katabatic winds are downslope winds. In a simple definition, these are winds that carry high-density air from high elevation down the slope. A sudden katabatic wind would have made it impossible to remain in the tent, and the most rational course of action would have been for the hikers to cover the tent with snow and seek shelter behind the tree line. Now, here's another fun fact that I didn't completely reveal earlier. Oops. On top of the tent, there was also a torch left turned on, possibly left there intentionally so that the hikers could find their way back to the tent once the wind subsided. The expedition proposed that the group of hikers constructed two bivouac shelters, one of which collapsed, leaving four of the hikers buried with the severe injuries that we observed.
What is a bivouac shelter?
Oh, yeah, I should. It's kind of like an igloo, but instead of like actually building it, you just burrow down and create like a little hole. It's kind of like a foxhole, I guess.
Okay.
Might be an easier definition.
That makes sense.
Get in your foxhole.
And like those little mice something in the snow that just like burrow.
Precisely. Now, this is our final idea of what could have taken place if we combine a couple ideas, and is actually one of the conclusions come to recently. So in 2020, the Russian authorities completed their study and came to the conclusion that a combination of katabatic winds mixed with the fact that they dug a small hole in the mountain to place their tent on a flat surface might have created an avalanche known as a slab avalanche, which is an avalanche formed by a sheet of snow breaking loose. The high winds would kind of push the snow, and then where they ended up cutting into the snow in order to dig down, slid off, and it just created a giant slab of snow that slid over on top of them. And at that point, they had to cut themselves out of the tent and go running because they were afraid more was coming. So that is what they came to the conclusion of in 2020. But again, there's just so many things that don't completely add up. Like, why were the four people with those big injuries 75 meters into the forest that's 1.5 miles away from their campsite? Like, it's just so many random things. But again, that could be in part because their cave that they dug out to sleep in collapsed on top of them, burying them under 13 feet of snow and crushing them. So that could be the case.
We'll never know.
I think those theories kind of bring us to a conclusion of, we don't know. We may never know. The slab avalanche is what they want us to go with and is what's been the latest census in 2020, but people are still researching it and trying to figure out exactly what happened because there's still an unsolved dimension to this whole mystery.
No, it's aliens.
See what I did there? Oh, okay. Adam's got it. Aliens.
But yeah, we'll never know for sure. Unless the aliens come down and they're like, yep, that was us.
We may never come to a complete conclusion on this one, and that's okay. You don't have to know everything in life.
So that's a wrap on Dyatlov Pass. And we appreciate the listen. And if you want to give us a follow on any of our social medias, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at The Unsolved Dimension. Just put that in the old search bar. It'll pop right up. You'll see our logo and everything.
So if you want to send us a message directly with a podcast idea, with a future episode idea, a question about a past episode, or just a comment about one that we've covered, or you want to just open up a dialogue and let us know how you're doing, hope everything's going well, you can reach us at theunsolveddimension@gmail.com. That is theunsolveddimension@gmail.com.
Yeah, and if you want to get on Apple Podcast Music, you can leave us a 5-star review and a comment, and we'll give you guys a shout-out on our next episode, the one that you listen to the podcast.
So you can catch us next time on The Unsolved Dimension.
All right, you beautiful people. You have a great week, great rest of your night. West night, great afternoon, morning, drive home, drive to work, lunch break. And we'll catch you next week.
Every Monday, except for when it's not every Monday.
Hey, we've been doing a lot. We've been busy bodies out here.
Peace.
Toodaloo, motherfuckers.
Good night.